Hello and welcome to the new series of the Balanced Garden podcast. I'm Tiger Lily Raphael and I'd like to thank you for joining me for the first episode of the second series. Whether you're a seasoned listener tuning back in or you're listening in for the very first time, I hope you enjoy this seasonal journey through the worlds inside and outside as we explore our relationships with nature, creativity and everything else in between. In this episode, The Return, I'll be talking with very special guest, an inspirational musician, curator and producer of unusual outdoor events, Sam Lee. He'll be telling us all about singing with nightingales and how he's been busy bringing people together with music and conservation in many magical and creative ways. It's been nearly a year since the last episode of the Balanced Garden podcast, and as we all know, these days a lot can happen in very little time. I find myself returning a very changed person to a very changed world. Along with many other pandemic podcasters, I started this one as a lockdown hobby, learning how to edit audio as I went along just because I could. It was a great surprise that so many of you tuned in, so I kept it going as autumn turned to winter and then spring to summer. In that time, I grew a baby, and a year later, I wasn't sure if I should or could bring the podcast back. I thought it might not work to go back through the seasons again. Wouldn't it be too similar to the last series and feel repetitive? But then I remembered it's never the same day twice. This year will be different from the last, and so will the next. Very different. So, with some encouragement from myself and some friends, I'm back, but not in exactly the same place. Never in the same place. Spring is here once again, but I find myself with very much less time to be creative and watch the world pass by. Now I have to remind myself to look up at the blossoms and budding leaves to take a breath. My pandemic pregnancy was not a planned one, and I've become a mother as a single person, so it can feel like there just aren't enough hours in the day. Therefore, this series may be a little more sporadic than the last. I'm aiming for one every other month rather than one every month. I hope that's okay. I'd also love to hear from you if you have any thoughts, questions or ideas about anything you hear or would like to hear in the podcast. So please do get in touch through the Balanced Garden Instagram or Facebook, or you can email me via hello@balancedgarden.co.uk. And for every episode of the podcast, there is also a blogcast where I include the links and material for each episode. You can find it, as well as details for live online and in-person yoga classes with Jessie, through the website balancedgarden.co.uk. And so we shake off our winter slumber and re-emerge with the buzz of eager pollinators hungry for the fresh nectar bursting from the early blooms, as new shoots push through the frost-hardened ground and the trees unfurl their fresh leaves to feed on the sunshine once again. It's a new world out there. Like the rest of the natural world, we adapt. Not always easily or quickly, but inevitably. The myths told in springtime in many different traditions center around rebirth and liberation from mental or physical constraints of one form or another. One such tale, as told by Mark Sparrow, involves the Celtic goddess Easter, who was venerated at this time of year and honored with the planting of seeds and the welcoming of new life into the world. Legend tells of Easter finding a wounded bird struggling to survive on the frosty winter ground. To save the bird's life, the goddess transformed her into a hare. But although the bird took on the hare's appearance, she retained her ability to lay eggs. Ever after, the hare would decorate her eggs and leave them as gifts for Easter. Hares become bunnies. Eggs become chocolate. Resurgence becomes resurrection. Easter becomes Easter. The outside layer may change and transform, but the heart remains the same. The celebration of new life and new hope. And there is always new life and new hope, even amidst unimaginable chaos and destruction. Each year in April, the nightingale returns to the southeast of England and begins to sing its famous song until late May or early June, once it has enchanted a mate into its nest for the British summer. It's a secretive bird which likes nothing better than to hide in the middle of an impenetrable bush or thicket. So inspired by its song, Sam Lee has spent the past few summers seeking out the nightingale for a midnight duet, and now dedicates a season of events to singing with nightingales. I managed to catch him before he disappeared into the thicket for a chat about these unusual events.
Well, it feels like it's the beginning of spring right now, and for me that means that in just a few days from this 1st of April that we're speaking, I'm going to be going off into the woods to begin my 7 weeks residency in Sussex and Gloucestershire doing my Singing with Nightingales concerts. Yeah, so that is starting imminently.
That you're going to live in the woods for the whole 7 weeks?
I'm not there the whole time. I'm generally about 4, 5, 6 days a week, depending. Starts a little bit easier and then it gets into like 6, sometimes 7 days a week, just solidly in the forest.
God, that must be an amazing way to spend the beginning of the summer. That set you up nicely.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful thing because, you know, what happens is you go into the woods and it's still pretty much winter. You know, there's a little bit of ground cover of some of the celandines and wood anemones, and then the bluebells come. But like the trees are bare, there's no leaves on anything. It's just a bit of blackthorn blossom. And then just like day by day, you're there. And because you're outside all day, you just watch the land come to life. And it's like watching a child grow up in a way. It's like, it's incredible. And then before you know it, you're surrounded by green and you've seen the succession every day. And it's such a privileged thing to be so close and observant and affected by that succession as life returns.
Yeah, that must be an incredible thing to bear witness to. So tell us what happens at these events.
Yeah, well, it's a very strange thing that's both kind of familiar and unusual. They're an intimate experience. We only have 35 people a night. That's our sort of capacity. So guests arrive into the woodland from all over the place, and they come and sit around the fire, and we do a little nature walk and look at the ecology of this coppice woodland and the history of coppicing and its impact on the land and us as a society, how it's kind of sustained us, provided us with wood, and how that's impacted on the prolific amounts of birdsong that there is in this coppice woodland and variety of birds. And then we have dinner, a big feast around the fire, and everyone's kind of served lashings of stew and beer and wine. And then after dark, come about 9:15 after dinner, we go into a kind of storytelling and music, and me and a guest musician tell the story of the nightingale and this bird's extraordinary role in our culture, in our folklore and mythology and folk song and narratives, and the ecology of the bird and its rarity now. And it's, you know, set to go extinct very soon from this country, that is. And how this bird has become the kind of most decorated and well-known bird in the world in some ways, by name, but not in voice, but how powerful his voice is. And then come around 11 p.m, we leave the campfire and do this silent, in the dark walk, no torches, where we walk through the woods and very slowly in single file to find where the nightingales are living. And it's around then that they start singing their night song, and it's this courtship song. And as we approach their habitat, we start to hear them because they're really loud. They're like, they sing around 90 decibels. So I say it's like being in front of the speaker when you're with them, when you get close to them, which we get about 10 feet away, because they're not very fearful at night. They just sing away regardless. It's like being in front of the speaker. And then me and the guests, we sit down on the grass or the woodland floor very quietly underneath this bird, who's literally, you can almost reach your hand out and pick him off the branch. And we listen, and then we start to make music with the bird. And when he hears human music, he starts to adapt his song and starts to play with you and improvise. And it's kind of this like ethereal, like just completely transporting experience, hearing this bird start to sing with humans. And you're in the dark and you're wrapped up in your blankets and things, and it's just, it completely blows you open.
I can confirm that as a part, as an attendee. How did you come up with this amazing idea to go into the woods and to take people? You take another musician, don't you, every time, a different one?
Yeah.
Well, how did you come to this?
Well, I came to it a few different ways. The birds exist, you know, all the way from East Devon, as far west as East Devon, and as far east as Western Mongolia. And all the cultures between there have some sort of relationship or identity associated with the nightingale. And many of them have musical collaborations with them. And our one in this country happened 98 years ago. Was the famous kind of, I mean, there are many instances, but our most famous one is 98 years ago, Beatrice Harrison, the cellist and muse of the classical composer Elgar, and very famous woman in her own right, pioneered the first ever live radio broadcast with the BBC. First time radio had ever been sort of put out, not in a studio. And she did this in her back garden in Surrey on May the 16th in 1924, and did it with her playing cello and with the nightingale. And it became a global sensation. I mean, really did in that time. Nothing ever had gone viral in quite the same way. And it then became an annual repeated thing on radio and broadcast all around the world. And I was honouring the 90th anniversary of that experience by going and spending some time with the nightingale and some musicians. And it was in that moment, realised that the bird was singing along with us. You expect like blackbirds or robins, well, actually robins less so, they're quite feisty, confident things. But you expect with birds that you get up close and that they just fly off. But the nightingale doesn't. He just lets you approach and will keep going and is really unflappable. So this experience was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. How do people get to hear this? And I just sort of was like, I'm going to invite people out. I'm going to make a concert here. You know, you can't bring Muhammad to the mountain, bring the mountain to Muhammad. So I set up these concerts and they've grown from there. And you saw it in its early days. It's now a big enterprise around the country. We have over 1,000 people coming this year. Is totally sold out. It's, you know, it's become a key thing for a lot of people in their diaries who come back year after year, which is really nice. Get to see people I've met over the years again.
That's wonderful. But now I understand you're somehow transporting these nightingales via YouTube to people in their homes as well. Started during the pandemic, is that right?
Yeah, so it was an amazing thing, really. You know, like a lot of us, we had to adapt to pandemic. And those of us who work in the live events were like, well, what is this digital thing that we would care not to get involved with ever? And because our events happen in April. It's right at the beginning as we were really getting into the kind of full confrontation of what this means and how do we survive? How do we keep ourselves entertained and occupied? It suddenly was clear that, well, yeah, let's go and broadcast the Nightingales. We actually had broadcasting equipment for a project we do with the Nightingales into theatres, and which you worked on. And it was like, well, hey, we've got the kit. We've got mobile broadcasting microphones into with aerials and that get it up on online apps as it's happening. So we did this thing where I just invited every famous person I knew or could get in contact with to contribute a bit of writing, a bit of music, a bit of poetry, some inspirational words. And we had like the Pet Shop Boys, we had Nick Mulvey, Johnny Flynn, Robert McFarlane, Farhana Yamin, all these like kind of incredible eco people, and they all gave, you know, unique pieces of music to it. And we had an hour and a half that we broadcast, and you know, I'd never done anything like it. And we did it on YouTube for free, and it was listened to by 50,000 people around the world.
Wow.
And it, like a lot of people, like, you know, it meant a lot having nature brought to them. I think it was like a lot of that digital output broke that barrier of how we access the arts. And then we've been doing it ever since. And this year we've had the homecoming, which is now our celebration of the Nightingale as they arrive and as he starts singing. And also on Earth Day, 22nd of April.
Exciting. So the Nightingale has a huge long history of symbolism and place in folklore and mythology. You've spent so much time with these birds now, and I imagine your relationship with them has kind of taken on new depths. And I guess I want to know a bit about what the bird means to you.
It's a very unusual relationship, but it's a very profound one, and that like all relationships, it's had a great effect on me and who I am. It's become a central part of my life. I've written a book all about the bird, which allowed me to go into real depth of Nightingale's many personalities. And I think what the kind of funny thing is that in writing the book, that I was discovering is that I have my own personal experience and story with the bird. And you know, the individual, you know, every night for 7 weeks, you know, let's say five nights, six nights a week, sometimes I'm like with this bird. It's like, that's quite a lot of time to spend with her. Spend more time with Nightingale than with my own parents. So I've got to know the personality, and I've also got to know my personality through the bird, because of them being a great reflector of emotion, as they have been for artists. They've been a muse for thousands of years, as we can see in, you know, the amazing amounts of prose and literature, etc., that they've been a place of consolation and kind of repose for artists to dwell upon life. So they create a very meditative and powerful space, this, as I say, the decoration of silence, this song hanging in the middle of the air, in the middle of the night, in the dark and silence. And that's really beautiful. So I've been able to access some of my own thoughts and journeys that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to make time for. But I also have got to know the bird through other people and who the bird is to other people. So there are many personalities, and there's the somber bird, the lamentful bird. And it depends on who's telling the story. But you realize that actually this bird holds different forms of sacredness for different people, which puts them into a kind of rather godlike place in a way, because there is so much breadth of culture and depth of culture that you realize here is a very, very powerful species that we have to look after. And I think in the end, what it comes down to for me is that my responsibility for working with the Nightingale isn't just about having nice night out and making some money and, you know, making the people happy. It's really about getting people closer to something that is godlike and is about to disappear and we're about to lose, and what that means on a wider level for us to lose nature, and how catastrophic that could be for us and our own sense of identity. What we lose when we lose a bird, we lose a kind of library of song, of ideologies, of philosophies, and yeah, we kind of lose a religion in a way. It's what happens when you lose any species. All the knowledge and, you know, animalistic behavior and relationship to the land that goes, been there for millions of years. They've been there for, nightingales haven't changed for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. We've evolved very quickly. Nightingales, you know, they're old, man. They're really old.
I like how you talk about all the different personalities that the nightingale has as well, and how clearly that nightingale's inspired you in so many different ways, you know, as an artist, as a songwriter, as a singer, has very clearly inspired you musically. And then as a conservationist, as a nature guide and a storyteller, and, you know, really galvanized this kind of activist element, yeah, of what you do. And you've teamed up, haven't you, with the RSPB to, you know, get behind, kind of fly this flag for the nightingales. You tried to get the nightingale to number one, didn't you?
The nightingale and like 20 other birds. We didn't get to number one. We got to number 18 in the charts, which for a folk singer is pretty good.
Amazing.
And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that was the Let Nature Sing project, which was in 2019, the year the Extinction Rebellion really kind of launched its international presence, and it all happened at the same time. It was an amazing period of awareness of protection of nature, and really keeping in that on that path that, you know, the nightingale is my bait, it's my clickbait to get people outdoors. For me, it's about creating reasons for people, permission. It is about this idea of permission of people to be stepping beyond the realms of the known, the comfortable, the legal, you know, in this idea of how we are confronted with inaccessibility to our natural resources. You know, this idea of trespass, of how we are confined to be in certain places, and something about the darkness that overcomes all of that sense of boundariness in ourselves internally and externally is a very simple and effective device. And I'm using that as the way of giving people a sense of, yeah, what can be reaped as a reward for doing that. I'm the guide, I'm the person who initiates it, that gives people the permission, but actually you realize with the events, it's like anybody can do this. You don't need me to be there. I've just the one that said, hey, it's okay, let's try it, and creating a safe container in which that can happen. But for me, it's goes beyond just a nightingale. It's about creating opportunities for people to have extraordinary experiences in nature, ones where they don't have to like go hiking or cycling or do the kind of prescribed, perceived, acceptable activities that actually aren't always the ones that elicit the deepest experience of listening, of meditative, thoughtful, playful, joyful, relationship building with nature. Because that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to build relationships.
Yeah, it's really interesting as you talk. It seems so obvious, the connection between music and nature. You know, nature is full of music, and music is the oldest form of communication that there is, that humans would have, you know, been singing and communicating through music outdoors in nature at the earliest times of our of our evolution. And yeah, it's the two things have become so removed. Like you say, you go you do your outdoors things, and then you go indoors and you listen to music, or you know, go to a gig, and these things completely disconnect. And the idea that you're bringing people both back into connection with nature through music, and also enabling people to experience music on a much deeper level through darkness and through nature and wilderness. And it makes total sense that when you close your eyes, when you're listening to music, we often close our eyes, and it heightens the senses so much more to be able to listen on a deeper level. And so that this format that you've come to with the singing the Nightingales events is really a perfect way of reviving, you know, what is actually an ancient tradition, a way of tuning in with the world, and as you say, to commune in this way, to feel closer to other species that we're in danger of losing.
I mean, you say it well. I think the important thing, you know, going back from what your original point of that it was the oldest form of communication, you know, there was a time where singing and speaking were indivisible, and that is a language that we have, you know, from our animal predecessors have evolved in accordance with, you know, how our brains have adapted to understand relationship and expression, naming our environment and putting language to it, putting an understanding and a form of communication to it. And birds have been critical in that, because they are our loudest, noisiest neighbors that we have understood. And our, you know, we birds have a very, very rich and diverse language that it takes a real specialist to actually be able to hear what's going on. But there's an enormous variety of messages that are being passed around. And from that comes, you know, a legacy of where artistic expression, you know, look at the oldest artistic expressions we have in the cave art, it's all in adoration of nature, of the animal, of the bird, of the spiritual possession of within those birds, and our being possessed by the spirits of those animals. And I'm using obviously very modern language to denote that, and we're limited within our English vocabulary to explain it, but that animism. And that has carried on throughout the hundreds of thousands of years, or the tens of thousands of years since the, you know, Chauvet and Lascaux, which are our oldest sort of music galleries, to the great masters. And you look at all the great painters and classical composers and people whose work has survived through today from over the centuries. And you're like, wow, they're all like in devotion of religion and nature, and are great students of that. And that goes all the way up to the Impressionist masters and further. And then suddenly, boom, there's like, oh, nature doesn't exist in the arts anymore. And now there's a little niche category of nature writing and nature art. And it's like, that's for the people who like nature over there. And then there's the rest of the world, which is worth millions of pounds more, that doesn't give a shit about nature, and has no connection, it's not trying to say anything. And it's like, when did those two things become so separate? You know, when did nature stop becoming the great teacher and muse and, you know, place of inspiration? And around the same time that we started destroying it and not caring for it, and the great demise had began. So I sort of feel like part of what I'm doing is about reconnecting that, because I work a lot with music, you know, part of it's for the audience, but a lot of what I do, not just the Nightingales, is about bringing artists into close proximity with the natural world in a way that they can re-find what that place of solace and insight, and the lessons that one from observing nature and being a participant within it, that you can derive as as motivations and being able to build clarity within your own artistic expression. And not that everyone should be painting pictures of trees or singing songs about rivers. I'm not suggesting that, but a way of, you know, it's a classroom.
Tell us a bit about the other nature again. Yeah, it's funny to have to put a label on it, like you say, that actually it's just was all there, all there was. Yeah. And now it's a genre, which is quite weird when you start to really think about it. The other events that you do outdoors.
As we speak, next week I'm leading the artist residential program called Amplify. It's a nature immersion experience, which is 3 days totally free for musicians. They have to apply, where we do 50% of nature immersion. And then the other half of that is about how the music industry can be more sustainable, and we can be amplifying the artist's voice and honing the artist's voice to be more concerned with the ecological and climate crisis that's going on right now. The arts being one of the greatest weapons in advocating for a change in regime. We then have the Nest Collective, which is the kind of company that all these events happen under. We do about 180 events a year now, so it's quite an extensive program across the UK. We hold a series of concerts in now 6 different cities: London, Bristol, Sheffield, Brighton, Manchester, Coventry, and somewhere else, I can't remember, maybe that's the 6, called the Campfire Club. And that's concerts around the campfire in green spaces, small amplified gatherings for about 150 people maximum in community gardens and city farms and allotments and private gardens and public parks and that sort of thing. We'd have the Magpies Nest Festival, which is multi-stage artists in exquisite spaces, churches and private homes that we kind of take over and bring these little mini one-day festivals to. We have our protest choir, the fire choir, and we have the pilgrimages and nature walks. So we lead two main pilgrimages, one in the Cairngorms in Scotland up in the Highlands, singing the story of the salmon, which is also a keystone species about to go extinct in this country. And then another 4 days in Sussex for the turtle dove, telling the story of that bird, which is the next bird we expect to go extinct in this country. So it's like trying to like really kind of like rewild the folk songs to bring about, you know, a return through devotional practice, you know, through walking, through song, through expression in the land. These are kind of crazy but kind of vital things that we've been doing as humans for forever, and we're trying to forge new ways of doing that to bring about a change of fortunes for these species.
Wonderful. And also tragic, but very worthy schedule of events you've got there. And Sam Lee as the musician.
Things are really busy at the moment. I've just finished but I'm midway through completing a film soundtrack to a beautiful movie that's going to be out at some point later in 22, with Jim Broadbent in the lead. And it's a film about pilgrimage, actually, perfectly. And it's a really delightful, heartbreaking, heart-opening story of an old man who walks the length of England. And I shall say no more. But it's called The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry. And it's a super joy to be working on it.
Brilliant. Oh, I'm really excited about that. I better read the book quickly before the film comes out. Wow, busy, busy man. Well, I'm not going to keep you any longer. It's been really wonderful to hear all about what you're doing, really inspiring. And I'm certainly going to try and come along to some things this summer.
Well, thank you. And thanks for putting the word out about it.
Sharing it. Least I can do, the very least. Well, yeah, I'll see you in a forest sometime soon, I hope.
To find out more about Sam's events with the Nest Collective and for the last few tickets to Singing with Nightingales this May or June, head to thenestcollective.co.uk. And here is Sam singing the Tan Yard Side with the Nightingales.
Boy inside. our own hand in my very own arms. And by the time outside, I will hold him in my very own arms. And by
So we return to a world changed, but how we return to it, how we change, whether a species adapts or declines, and what is brought from the past into the future, what we bring to the world, that is the choice, that is the freedom we have to choose. Here is a poem called Narrative Theology by Padraig O'Tuma. And I said to him, are there answers to all of this? And he said, the answer is in a story, and the story is being told. And I said, but there is so much pain. And she answered plainly, pain will happen. Then I said, will I ever find meaning? And they said, you will find meaning where you give meaning. The answer is in a story. And the story isn't finished. The question is not where, but now. Their questions never finished or exhausted, and the answers in the asking, not the answer. The answers in the breathing of the question into the love of holding on to what was never whispered, never seen, but what we dreamed of in the morning, then forgot while Venus hid. The answers in the living, not the knowing. The answers in the telling of the story, in half-forgotten memory, and all unfinished stories. The answers in the showing time of senses. The answers in the question, in the learning, in the fading page of writing, in the letter sent to lovers, in the paying for the other. The answer is the generous. Is the truthing, the absolutely truthful anger. And forgiving is the giving of what you don't deserve. It's what I'll serve because you're hungry, even though you may not know it. The answer is in the living and the dying, in the trying for redemption on an empty hill of crosses. It's the shoring up of hope and the gathering of losses. It's the looking for companions in the hills and in the glens. It's the waking up and walking up and starting up again. The answers in the living and the trying. And I said to the wise man, what is the answer to all of this? And he said, the answer's in the story, and the story's just unfolding. Thank you for listening to the Balanced Garden podcast, which is written and produced by me, Tiger Lily Raphael. The soundtrack is Yes Mike by Manasseh Meets Praise on Roots Garden Records. For show notes, head to the blogcast at balancedgarden.co.uk. And if you'd like to support the podcast, please rate and review it and share it with your friends. Until next time, live well and enjoy.